I would like to take a moment and mention a pressing issue we are seeing in our modern world. And that is tech use and tech light. The data are impressive and concerning on isolated wavelengths of light, especially shorter wavelengths, which is blue light. For those that don't know, we have chromophores, which are special proteins that absorbs specific wavelengths of light. For blue light, the light that is LED light and tech light, that protein is called melanopsin. Melanopsin is responsible for our circadian biology, physiology and cell functioning, hormone regulation, and even a connection to an area huge for mood. A consideration we should include is this protein was not even discovered until 1998. It seems important for us to understand how our biology uses the different wavelengths of light for various aspects of our biology. This blue light chromophore is our master controller, our master clock. Remember, circadian rhythm is a two-part process, two independent parts, light and dark. For a quick reference, see the 2017 Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine. But for now, I have something exciting. I want to introduce a product unlike any other product available. A highlight is the product from Daylight Computer Company created their product based on these factors. The Daylight Computer is completely blue light free. It has no flicker. Short wavelength flicker is extremely harmful for our eyes and downstream biology. Light flicker is constantly turning our central nervous system on and off. Essentially, it is like going to a light switch and repeatedly turning it on and off. The problem is, blue light and LED light does this, and it is so rapid, you cannot even perceive this in real time. The Daylight Computer is the lowest stimulation and foremost for sensory sensitive users. It is no question that the alternative product, especially when used at night, do not address or consider this in their product. It is so toxic to human biology. Big tech corporations have patents on how their short wavelength implicate the human nervous system. And a bonus, despite Daylight Computer not having backlight, it is very functional for outdoor use. And of course, increased sunlight is always preferred. I am happy to offer a discount for the Daylight Computer. You can use the code AUTISM for a $25 off coupon. Again, use the code AUTISM and the discount code for $25 off. See the link in the show notes to Daylight Computer Company, or just give it a quick search in your internet browser. Use the code AUTISM for $25 off. For today's episode, we will expand on the so-called neurulation time. Today, we will get into the process of brain development. We will talk briefly about maternal factors and biomarkers. My ask to you is this: to understand why autistics have so many comorbid conditions, mostly related in the medical conditions, consider how and when the brain and body are created and connected in this time during embryogenesis. So some common maternal factors, some biomarkers, if you will. Tyrosine is a big one. Remember the risk of hypothyroid. Many times, the mother will be put on a levothyroxine, maybe 50 to 200 micrograms daily dose. And this is usually taken in the morning. What's curious about this is, you take this in the morning, and you can only have water, no food, or other types of drink for 30 to 60 minutes. Now, if your metabolism is good, you can get by with just 30 minutes for the medicine to kick in. Essentially, what we are doing here with prescribing this medication is replacing the lack of sunlight we are getting during the day. Remember, tyrosine is an aromatic amino acid, and it absorbs strong, short wavelengths of light. Also related to the hypothyroidism, with the T3 and T4, iodine is often supplemented to mitigate the risk of autism. Iodine is the 3 and 4 in the T3 and T4. Remember the autism and Parkinson's episode? We cover T3 in good detail about its cellular roles, not just hormonal, but for the vast roles on the cell. Also, and similar to tyrosine, is tryptophan. Tryptophan is a huge one because of its roles in embryogenesis. We will get into that in more detail in a future episode with tryptophan, microtubules, and mitosis. Tryptophan here is vast. But remember, tryptophan is an aromatic amino acid as well. So it needs the sunlight. And we will get into on that episode about how indirect supplementation, maybe tryptophan from food is an example, doesn't really play into this. Also, the B9. We've covered B9 in the folate. That is a big biomarker and maternal risk factor. Remember its role with MTH, FR, and methionine for the DNA methylation. Omega-3s is a big supplemental factor to mitigate the risk of autism. Remember what we've talked about with DHA and how DHA is just vast for electrons, moving electrons through the body. Vitamin D is an easy one. And gestational diabetes. Now, we will get into that on a different episode even, about how the growth hormones and excessive maternal insulin-like growth factors, or the placenta growth, can signal, overstimulate cell division in the embryo, in this timeline that we are fitting right now. So sticking with this theme, some common environmental insults and toxins. But remember, autism predates these findings. These were not problems back in the Kanner kids and Asperger kids, and all the way up through the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and so forth. These are all kind of new. There's pollution, glyphosate, aluminum. The BPA is a big one. Very concerning. Mercury, of course. Just see the episodes from Nicole Rincon and Christian Lyall for a full review on some of these environmental insults and toxins. So during embryogenesis, and we are creating the brain here, remember the four cell types: proencephalon, mesencephalon, rhombencephalon, and then the fourth one, the spinal cord. Okay. So this happens early in embryonic development, specifically during the process of neurulation, when the neural tube forms and begins to differentiate into the primary brain vesicles. These three structures, the proencephalon, mesencephalon, and rhombencephalon, are the first major divisions for the brain, and this appears around the third to fourth week of the embryonic stage, approximately 21 to 28 days. So the proencephalon is responsible for the forebrain. This begins to form around day 22 or 23. As the neural tube closes and expands at the anterior, so the front end. And by the end of the fourth week, the proencephalon differentiates. So it further divides, it becomes a larger complex. So it differentiates into two secondary vesicles. And we are creating the brain here. The first vesicle is the telencephalon, which will become the cerebral hemispheres. So very vast for humans. And the second vesicle is this diencephalon. And this will form the thalamus, that sensory relay station. We've talked about the thalamus in great detail. If you want to understand sensory perception processes, you must understand the thalamus. It also forms the hypothalamus, the little nuclei that is responsible for our hormone. It combines the brain and body through the hormonal system. The diencephalon are also responsible for some eye development and the epithalamus. The mesencephalon, a big region of interest for us. This is a very curious region. We will get into more detail on it towards the end of the episode. But this also emerges at the same time as the proencephalon, around day 22 or 23. And it's in the middle portion of the neural tube. It makes sense that it's in the middle portion because this will eventually be called the midbrain. However, unlike the other two areas, the proencephalon and rhombencephalon, you know, the mesencephalon does not subdivide into further vesicles. It remains the mesencephalon. And this is very, very curious to me. The rhombencephalon, the hindbrain, to no surprise, forms around day 22 and 23 as well. And this is the posterior end of the neural tube. By the end of the fourth week, it divides into two further areas of the brain. The first one is the metencephalon, and this develops the pons and cerebellum. The cerebellum is a very underrated region of interest for essentially all humans, but especially autism. This is a big part of motor coordination, motor control. And if you look at the brainstem or any part of the brain, you can just see this just looking at the full brain from the lateral position. The pons is a little football-shaped region on the anterior part of the brainstem. And lastly, the myencephalon. The myencephalon is responsible for the medulla. This part of the inferior brainstem is responsible for several automatic responses, physiology, and just reflexes, all of these things that we don't have to necessarily think about doing. We just do them, like breathing. So, all three areas, the proencephalon, mesencephalon, and rhombencephalon, occur right around day 22 and 23, when the neural tube forms and begins to differentiate into a larger, more complex organ called the brain. And then around day 28, these other primary vesicles start subdividing, except for that mesencephalon. And what we're doing here is just developing the brain, the large complex brain. And a big region of interest here from the previous episode, the subdivision and signaling, the molecules used the sonic hedgehog to undergo this task. The sonic hedgehog is a big region of interest for this process to happen. Okay, before we get into the different nuclei and specialized roles of the mesencephalon, let's just kind of zoom out here and understand the mesencephalon from an evolutionarily perspective here. So the mesencephalon is a very ancient part of the brain. If you think about it, it's at the bottom. So it's conserved across many different species and across evolution. In simpler organisms, the midbrain, especially that optic tectum area that we covered in the autism and eye movements episode when we first kind of introduced the mesencephalon. This is a machine-like, first-responding type of structure, and it's dominant for sensory input and integrating sensory, especially the vision. And with humans, the forebrain takes over many of those higher functionings, included in vision. Remember, the brain is roughly 40 to 45% dedicated to vision. But the midbrain retains this critical unified roles for processing the sensory input. This is kind of the first stop, even. So functionally, the mesencephalon develops into the midbrain, which we will cover. And that includes structures like the tectum, so the superior and inferior colliculi. The inferior is auditory reflexes. And the tegmentum area. So a region of interest here and covered in many, many episodes is the substantia nigra. And also we'll introduce the red nucleus. And this is involved in movement and reward. These functions also integrate sensory reflexes and motor coordination. This subdivision might disrupt the midbrain's role as a relay and integration hub between the forebrain and the hindbrain. So it kind of connects the different areas of the brain. Now, one thing to consider, because as brains evolve, they grow in size, they grow laterally and posteriorly. Okay, they just move out and up. The midbrain here is kind of squished. It's kind of a tight fit between the rhomb encephalon, the lower areas, and then this huge proencephalon area, the human cortex and so forth. Evolutionarily and functionally, this mesencephalon is very limited on its capacity to expand. However, it seems like the living organism and the roles here that we will get into with the mesencephalon, it cannot allow for more description, more roles and functions. Relatively speaking, the mesencephalon is very small. So just a recap and a kind of a summary. For the mature brain, once developed, the proencephalon, including the telencephalon and diencephalon, this is the biggest expansion. This has the biggest role as far as brain size, real estate. And this is for complex cognition and the sensory processing. The mesencephalon, or just the midbrain, we've covered that. The rhomb encephalon evolves into the metencephalon and myencephalon. And this is kind of specialized for control of movement and automatic functions, those reflexes, like breathing and heart rate and so forth. We don't have to think about that stuff. We often don't have to think about movements either. Have you ever just paid attention to how much a human moves, even whenever it's not really goal-directed, there's not a task at hand? It's very fascinating. So some factors of the subdivisions here. The subdivisions process, this is orchestrated by kind of intricate patterns along the anterior to posterior and the dorsal to ventral axis of the neural tube. And some key drivers here include morphogen gradients, things like fibroblast growth factors, and WNT proteins, and Sonic Hedgehog. Now, with autism research, the WNT proteins is highly researched. It's a region of interest as well. There are transcription factors and gene expressions. So a couple of different examples here if you want to kind of go into the rabbit hole, if you will. These include OTX2 and GBX2, PAX6, PAX6, and EMX2, and HOX genes, HOX. You can look up those if you wish. And there are signaling centers like the anterior neural ridge, ANR. This is kind of helps regulate the WNT. And from earlier, with that midbrain, the mesencephalon being kind of compact, it's kind of tightly squeezed into this region. There's a midbrain-hindbrain boundary, it's called. And this kind of stabilizes the midbrain as a single unit while allowing the cerebellum to kind of evolve. Cellular proliferation and migration. We will have future episodes diving deep into this kind of dense and hot topic for the autistic brain. Cell proliferation and migration. This is a very hot topic for the autistic brain. I would like to mention chroma. Lights designed for humans. Chroma, a Seattle-based innovator founded by ex-NASA and Air Force engineer Michael Shapiro, is on a mission to enhance physical and mental health with purpose-built devices, unlocking peak human health, cognitive function, and performance. Shapiro launched Chroma to restore the natural light lost to screens in indoor living and delivers faster recovery, sharper minds, and better sleep. Their products hit hard. The Iron Forge speeds muscle repair with red and near-infrared light, while the Skylight mimics sunlight to boost sleep and energy. A standout, the Forge Lamp, is a portable gem that fires 660 nanometer and 850 nanometer light to energize mitochondria and heal tissues on the go. Remember the four red light chromophores on cytochrome C oxidase, frequently talked about in the podcast. This is why their products are built with military grade durability that have lasting impact. Chroma's tech fuses precision and power. Gallium titride power supplies, smaller, cooler, and stronger than silicone, provide flicker-free light that's easy on the eyes. High-powered LEDs target key wavelengths for skin, tissue, and cellular health with smart heat management for the lasting impact. Every design decision Chroma makes serves a purpose: to create devices that are precise, durable, and effective for improving human life. Remember, humans use different wavelengths of light for different functions of life. Remember when I ask, what do you think light is? Chroma designs with our biology in mind, from sleep aids and wound healing to mitochondrial energy, full body lights, and blue light blocking glasses. They are US made and Chroma ships globally and accepts FSA and HSA payments. Use autism at checkout for a 10% off discount. That's autism at checkout for a 10% off discount. So let's get into the mesencephalon here. The midbrain. Let's understand its roles, some of the nuclei involved, and what it's trying to accomplish. Overall, it's very important for various functions as motor control and sensory processing and the autonomic regulation. These things are vast for the central nervous system, which is what we are creating here. The goal of the central nervous system is to move the living organism. And in large part, the brain is conserving and allocating and recruiting different regions. How is the living organism going to move while sustaining its species, by remaining safe, by staying alive? So a big part here, and key nuclei, is the substantia nigra. We've covered this in the autism and Parkinson's episode, and in all of the autism and basal ganglia episodes. There's probably 4 to 6 episodes on that features the substantia nigra. This is a very interesting little nuclei. Remember, just a quick recap here. It's divided into two parts. The substantia nigra pars compacta, which produces the dopamine. D1 dopamine, so excitatory dopamine, which are receptors, DR1 and 5. And D2 dopamine, which is inhibitory, so receptors DR2, 3, and 4. This is involved in the motor control, motor coordination, the basal ganglia, our go, no-go area. Right next to that is the red nucleus. Now, this is an introduction to the red nucleus. And it plays a role in motor coordination as well. More specifically, voluntary movements. And it is part of a so-called extra pyramidal motor system. So the extra pyramidal motor system is essentially a network of some neural pathways in the central nervous system that regulates involuntary and automatic movements. And it's responsible for some posture and muscle tone as well. You might have heard of the pyramidal system, but the extrapyramidal is a little bit different. Some key components of the extrapyramidal system include the basal ganglia. I don't have to go into more detail about that. We've covered that. The cerebellum. So it helps control fine motor control and balance and timing. The brainstem nuclei, the red nucleus and substantia nigra. The reticular formation. We briefly mentioned the reticular formation before. This is scattered throughout the brainstem and it regulates posture, gait, and reflexive movements. Also involved in the extrapyramidal system is the thalamus. We've covered the thalamus. However, if you think about this extrapyramidal roles and autism, let's specifically mention its roles with autism. So with the substantia nigra and the dopamine dysregulation, you know that in the autistic phenotype, there are some implications here, some signaling processes that are abnormal. And it's linked to repetitive behaviors and motor stereotypies. This is where that is occurring here. It's a very easy thing in autism to evaluate and observe. The red nucleus and motor coordination. So in autism, it contributes to that motor clumsiness, which is very common, and motor delays. Those delays in certain milestones, like crawling, walking, and grip strength, and being able to just function and coordinate movements. The basal ganglia circuits, of course, because of the substantia nigra. There are structural and functional MRI studies that show the basal ganglia is abnormal in the autistic phenotype in both brain volume and connectivity. Remember Dr. Hannah Stevens. She has wonderful work on the dorsal striatum. And it's kind of enlargement. It's very dense here with dendrites and axons. Remember, the dorsal striatum is the input area of the basal ganglia. It coordinates, recruits different areas for the related outcome of the movement. So back to the nuclei within the mesencephalon. There's an ocular motor nucleus, which is the third cranial nerve. And this is controlling eye movements. So if you think about autism, we ought to go here. We ought to go to the eye movements. It's not difficult to see this is involved. An additional oculomotor nucleus role is mediating pupillary constriction. So with the sympathetic versus parasympathetic fibers here, it has a problem, and its main goal here is mediating the pupillary constriction for the parasympathetic arm of the autonomic nervous system. There's an accessory to the ocular motor nucleus. It's a proper noun, Edinger-Westphal nucleus. This is also related to the parasympathetic nucleus for the pupillary constriction. Then the trochlear nucleus, cranial nerve 4. And this kind of innervates the muscles of the eye. It's responsible for downward and inward eye movements. There's a mesencephalic nucleus of the trigeminal nerve, cranial nerve 5. This is part of the para-aqueductal gray, which we will introduce momentarily. This has involvements with proprioceptive input from the muscles. In addition, the superior colliculus, which we've covered, and the inferior colliculus, which we've covered. So I will skip those. But we are to the para-aqueductal gray, the PAG. This is a very good region of interest here because it contains nuclei involved in pain modulation. Think about autistics and that pain regulation. Sometimes our pain perception is off. And oftentimes with temperature as well. In the late 80s and 90s, that pain regulation or that kind of perception, it was common for it to be nicknamed retard strength. And today's society probably wouldn't allow that. They wouldn't like that, I should say. But retard strength was very much a thing back in my childhood. The PAG also is involved in autonomic regulation, so with the heart rate and breathing, and it's also involved in defensive behaviors. This is a very cool area of the PAG, and just today on 311, a study showing that the ACC to the PAG transforms signals tied to empathy to certain behavioral responses. Remember the ACC? We've talked about the ACC in quite detail. It's a part of the medial prefrontal cortex. The ACC is the anterior cingulate cortex. It's involved in that internal calculation. It's a big region of interest here. But when freezing, if you've heard of the freeze, fight, flight, when freezing, the PAG is involved here, and it shuts down the body by sending signals down the spinal cord. This is a very cool feature of the PAG. So the next time you find yourself frozen, you're freezing, as they say, just think about how the PAG and the mesencephalon, the top of the brainstem there, is just shutting it off, shutting down the downstream signals to the spinal cord. And your extremities are not moving. It's very fascinating. So let's look at the broader mesencephalon impact with autism. The superior colliculus we've covered. It's a very fascinating little region here. And the whole reason I got into the mesencephalon, because the superior colliculus and the inferior colliculus, its primary role is biasing the attention of the living organism. Just imagine what this has functionally with learning the environment. This is so easy to connect here with the autistic phenotype. This ought to be one of the most significant regions of interest here for understanding the brain development during neurulation, even, and creating this autistic phenotype. What makes autistics autistic? This is so fascinating and underrated and overlooked. So the PAG with autism, so for that autonomic and emotional regulation, autistic individuals, through the work of this biology and neuroplasticity with the experience and being forced into social norms, we have a heightened rates of anxiety and that atypical pain perception. This is a very fascinating how the pain perception in autism is very abnormal. The eye movements, as mentioned earlier, with the oculomotor nuclei, the eye saccades. Remember the episode on eye tracking as a biomarker? This is a very useful tool to diagnosing autism at an earlier rate, earlier stages in life. This is huge for kind of interventions, kind of suppressing the harms via the neuroplasticity, the changes in the brain from experience. This is a big region here. And proprioception. This is huge in autism with that motor planning, the deficits in motor control, and oromotor difficulties. So the speech articulation that we've covered in autism and speech and language, which it should be language and speech because language comes first and then the speech. But with the arcuate fasciculus connecting Wernicke and Broca, and then the midbrain down here, it's huge, huge for autism. So I can't undervalue here the mesencephalon and autism because of its critical relay. It's the hub for integrating all of these sensories and biasing the attention of the living organism and all of the autonomic responses. Sensory motor integration is vast here, probably the top reason that the mesencephalon is overlooked. And then the connectivity. We've covered some connectivity with the autism and eye movements episode with the diffusion tensor imaging, DTI, and the white matter tracks. And the timing of the neurodevelopmental. This is what the whole episode in the last week's episode is about. Forming the central nervous system, the brain and spine. Think about what we've covered here today with the mesencephalon's role and access to the spinal cord for motor movements even. This is huge here. If you're listening to the podcast or listening to the episode, please feel free to leave a review or rating. In podcasting, reviews, ratings, and downloads are huge, and I very much appreciate your feedback. You can contact me on X at RPS47586. You can check out the Hop link for links to all of the podcasts across many different platforms. You can check out the YouTube channel for full-length videos and shorts and clips. You can email me. info.fromthespectrum@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to From the Spectrum Podcast.